Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shabbat Zachor. Also this week, I want to thank Trudy Greener for her many years of service to the podcast as our production coordinator in Jerusalem. Trudy would work with the members of the Pardes faculty to make sure that each podcast happened on time and everything would work correctly in Jerusalem. Trudy is going on to new adventures. She's leaving Pardes after many, many years of service. We wish her the very best and we'll miss her very much. Good news is that she'll still be taking some courses at Pardes, and we look forward to seeing her very often. I also want to welcome Arlene Harel, who's taking over from Trudy for the job of production coordinator. Arlene has already the staff position as special programs coordinator, and is taking on the job of podcast production coordinator in addition to her current duties. Welcome, Arlene. Thank you very much. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses the additional reading that we listened to during Shabbat Zachor, this Shabbat. There's a source sheet for this podcast, so please print it out. I'm sending it as the next episode in the podcast channel. Print it out and use it to follow along with Rabbi David Levenkreuz. Rabbi Levenkreuz is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as special projects coordinator. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. This week in Shul, after the regular Torah reading, we read Parshat Zachor, a passage from the Torah in honor of Purim, where we remember what Amalek did to us as we were leaving Egypt. Haman, of course, is seen as being the descendant of Amalek, and so it's appropriate to read this passage, which some people find very, very disturbing, on the Shabbat before Purim. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Dvarim 25, verses 17 to 19, the first verse on your source sheet. Bederech betzeitchem b'mitzrayim, as you were leaving Mitzrayim. Asher karcha bederech. Ve'yizbach b'cha kol hanechshalim acharecha, ve'ata ayef ve'yager ve'lo yireh Elohim. How undeterred by fear of God, he surprised you on the march when you were famished and weary and cut down all the stragglers in your rear. Not a nice person, not a nice tribe, not something nice to happen. Ve'aya behaniach Adonai Elohecha lecha mikol oyvecha misaviv ba'aretz, Asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha nachala l'rishta. And therefore, when the Lord grants you safety from all your enemies around you, in the land that the Lord your God is giving you as a hereditary portion, what do you then have to do? What mitzvah is obligatory to us? Timche et zecher Amalek mitachad ha-shamayim lo tishkach. You shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Very, very powerful command to remember and to forget Amalek at exactly the same time. What Amalek did was very, very wrong. There's no two ways. I don't think there's no two ways about it. Many would say what they did was wrong, attacking this defenseless people. On the other hand, to have to destroy and kill and get rid of every descendant also seems a bit harsh, if not completely immoral. There are some people in Israel today, I would must say unfortunately, who revel in this idea, who dream of the time when Amalek can be destroyed, whoever is Amalek in their imagination. But most people of goodwill do not think this way. And it's very, very interesting to look at how, on the one hand, Jewish tradition has justified this commandment, how it's tried to explain it away. And what I'm going to try and do today is show that the justifications are not necessarily sufficient, the getting rid or lessening or explaining it away is not necessarily sufficient, but that actually there's a way to completely reinterpret this mitzvah in such a way that it really actually becomes something positive and good for people to think about. I do want to say that I am very, very dependent on other people for the preparation of the shiur, on secondary sources. I'll mention them as I go along, but I do have to say that an article by Avi Sagi the punishment of Amalek in Jewish tradition, coping with the moral problem, is a lot of what I've based myself on. So how is this commandment justified? In your second source, Dvarim 25:16, we read, "Everybody who does horrible things is abhorrent to the Lord your God." You have to imagine these people who are dehumanized and enslaved. They've given up hope of ever going to be free. They've had suffering. God frees them. They're just coming towards freedom, and another nation attacks them just as they are beginning to take baby steps towards being free people. In doing so, they're transgressing every norm of a just war. There's no need for the attack. They're not defending territory. Israel is passing through. It's not expansionist. They fought the war unfairly. They attack without warning. They attack the weak, the vulnerable. They attack the weak amongst already very, very weak people. They attack the utterly defenseless and show no fear of God. In terms even of worship at that time, they were not going according to the rules of war. And many might point to Midrash Tanchuma Mitzora, which says, "Whoever is compassionate to those who deserve cruelty ends up being cruel to those who deserve compassion." And there are some who say we do need to destroy them. But again, that doesn't answer the question of why they're children. The Ramban says that it was pure rebellion against God that made them attack Am Yisrael. They heard what God had done, they felt threatened by it, and they came to show that they were their masters. This was not completely political. This was not political. Amalek was motivated by their desire to show that they were greater than God, almost Nazi-like in terms of trying to show we are the greatest in the world. There's none greater than us, not even God. There is a way perhaps to see this as being a deterrent, that a radical war is needed to utterly destroy the evil. So one way of justifying is to say they really did something wrong, they deserve to be killed, and perhaps it's not enough to just say, you know, one generation comes and another generation goes, or one generation goes and another generation comes. Even the future generations have to suffer for it. In the third source sheet from Dvarim, you see that there is a lot of emphasis about not leading people into sin. Lamana sher lo yelamdu etchem lasot kachol toavotam asher asu leElohehem vechatatam laAdonai Elohechem, lest they lead you to doing abhorrent things they have done, lest for their God, and you stand guilty before God. And over here, the fear of Amalek is that they could tempt us to do harm. What's so bad about Amalek is that they weren't just regular old-time bad people, but they also wanted to get us into their camp and get us to do wrong things. Nevertheless, I would say that for many, many rabbis throughout the centuries, and this is not just a modern issue, this is not just Western democratic people who have issues with it, the rabbis had issues with it too. And despite these justifications, there was an enormous project of trying to lessen the scope of this commandment. And what we're going to look at is the different strategies they used. What is the strategy that the tradition used to try and understand this commandment? So we have this commandment to destroy Amalek. We have justification of them as being very bad people who tried to get other, even us, to do very bad things, and maybe that carried on over the generations. What the rabbis tried to do was limit this commandment. So one way is by using an internal text, showing how there are ideas in the Jewish texts that would render this moot. So, for example, in Dvarim 24:16, which is source sheet number 4, "Lo yumtu avot al banim, ubanim lo yumtu al avot, ish bechat'o Yumatu. Parents shall not be put to death for children, nor children be put to death for parents. A person should be put to death only for his own crime. This very, very strong idea that it's not fair to punish the children for the sins of the parents. So one is an internal textual reason. A second strategy that they use is to say, well, if the reason disappears, then you no longer have to destroy them. And we see this in the Sifrei of Dvarim, where it says, "Leman asher yilmedu etchem lasot, melamed she'im osim tshuva, ein neharagim." If they repent, they are not killed. In other words, Amalek is only to be destroyed as long as they are Amalek. But if they stop being evil, we no longer have reason to destroy them. So we have internal textual reasons. We have reasons based on logic or the purpose of the commandment. But I think one of the most interesting ones is a biological, if you will, reason. And Rambam writes in Melachim, "Mitzvat aseh lachrim shivat amamim." It is a positive command to destroy the seven nations. This is not talking about Amalek. "V'kol shebali de'echad mehem v'lo hargu over b'lo taseh." Everybody who does not kill them has transgressed a negative commandment. And then the Rambam says something very, very interesting, basing himself on earlier sources. "V'kvar avad zichram." The seventh nation's identity has been lost completely. We don't know who they are. We don't know who these people are. And therefore, we no longer have an obligation to destroy Amalek. And then in number seven, the Rambam, "V'chen mitzvat aseh la'abed zecher Amalek." The Rambam extends this to apply to Amalek too. He says, we no longer know who Amalek is, and therefore we do not have to destroy them. When Sennacherib, king of Assyria, and the destroyer of Samaria came, he mixed up the nations, and all the identity of the biblical nations have been lost. We're not able to label any contemporary people a descendant of Amalek. This is again extended, and certainly if there's a call to peace, as in number 8, if there's a call to peace and the people accept it, if they take upon themselves the seven Noahide commandments, then there is no reason to destroy them. So we see that there's been almost an industry, if you will, of getting rid of the commandment, of lessening the commandment, using internal textual reasons, using logic, and using history or geography or biology by saying that they've disappeared. And we could now go to sleep. A mitzvah has been set to rest. It's a complicated mitzvah, a difficult mitzvah, a morally problematic mitzvah, but we don't need to worry about it. For better or for worse, though, I think this mitzvah has a lot of power. It has a lot of power. There's something very strong about it. And our tradition has been unwilling just to explain it away. It felt that there was something in it. There was something there for us to learn from it. And therefore, what we have is another industry. And that is looking at what Amalek might mean to us today. And I'd like to share with you a number of ideas. If we look at the Ma'am Lo'ez of Ki Teitzei, "Aval Elechem L'da'at She'Bechol Dor V'Dor She'Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloteinu," like in the Pesach Haggadah, in every generation there's somebody who rises to destroy you. "Ha'Kol Hu Ma'amalek She'Mitlabesh Kol Pa'am Be'otah Be'umah Acheret." It is Amalek in every nation that rises to destroy us, and each time Amalek clothes themselves in a different nation. What number 9 is saying, this is Reb Chaim of Brisk said this, many people said this, Amalek is not biological, it's not genetic, it's not historical, it's not genealogical. What Amalek is Amalek is the name given to the people, the anti-Semites of every generation that we are obliged to destroy. It becomes an obligation to destroy anti-Semitism. Number 10 shows something even more interesting to my mind. It says, asks the famous Gemara, where is Haman alluded to in the Torah? And it says, Hamin ha'etz, from the tree with which I commanded that you not eat, did you eat? And over here, what it's saying is that Amalek is the evil impulse. Amalek is not out there. Amalek is in us. We have an internal Amalek. And a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to rid oneself of the evil impulse by keeping Torah. This is not a specific people, but there's evil in us every time. And it's not a people to be killed, but a behavior to be rooted out. So the first one sees Amalek as, yes, being a people, but not being genealogical. It's some type of, it's got contemporary meaning. The tenth one, the second reason, spiritualizes it and says, hey, wait a minute. What Amalek is the evil impulse. It's internal to us. In Michael Lerner, we read something very, very interesting. He's not speaking about Amalek, but I think he brings something very, very interesting. Michael Lerner, the founder of Tikkun magazine, in his famous book, Jewish Renewal, he writes the following. Psychoanalytic and socialist movements face the fact that cruelty and evil are deeply embedded in individual and social structures. They suggest a process of individual and social change that will begin to undo that complex layering. The notion that the past exercises a tyranny over the present, central to the thinking of psychoanalytic theories, suggests that we humans face a long and difficult process of undoing our social and psychological inheritance. Yet what is being denied is this, that the evil is evil, with a capital E, that the cruelty is cruelty, with a capital C. What Lerner is saying is that evil exists, but it does not have a life of its own. Evil comes about because of bad parenting and rough neighborhoods. It does not exist in and of itself, and we can get rid of it. That there is anything we reject, he writes, that there is anything necessary, ontological, or fixed about the shadow. It may take generations to undo the legacy of cruelty, but it is not a fixed and permanent part of what it is to be human. It can be overcome, however slowly and cautiously. Very, very, very beautiful words from Michael Lerner, saying evil does not have a life of its own. Evil exists, but it can be gotten rid of. Very, very differently from this is what Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch says, basing himself on the idea of Ohavei Adonai Sinura, those who love the Lord hate evil. He writes, the glimpse into the future is intended to call upon everybody who are friends of God's cause to hate implacably not the evil man, but the evil itself. In other words, evil exists. And to rise in open opposition against evil whenever and wherever it may appear. For this brief look into the days to come is meant to assure us that evil cannot last forever in this world, that the future belongs to the righteous, and that with every human act of intervention against evil, the kingdom of God is brought one step nearer. Hirsch is saying that evil does exist as a reality. It's true we need to hate evil, not the evildoer, but we do need to destroy evil wherever it may be. So we have really three different issues. We have making Amalek the anti-Semites of every generation. We have making it something internal, the Yetzer Hara. And we have the whole debate about whether evil exists or doesn't exist, with Amalek perhaps representing the idea that evil does exist as an ontological reality. Extremely fascinating is what Rabbi Shai Held does with this passage. We'll have to go back to the Hebrew in number one. It's very, very clear. It's very, very clever. Very, very clever understanding of the Hebrew. It says, and if you go back to the Hebrew, it says, "V'lo yireh Elohim," and they did not fear God. And when we read it, it sounds as if they're talking about Amalek. That's the way the JPS translates it. That's the way almost, I think, all translations translate it. It sounds as if they did not fear God, and this is Amalek. And yet, if you read it in the Hebrew, you'll see that it's just as easy to understand it as being referring to Israel. And there's a question, not only Rabbi Held brings it up, but many people bring it up, and that is, why were the stragglers, why were the vulnerable, why were the weak allowed to lag behind? Why didn't they wait for them? What was wrong with Am Yisrael that they did not worry about the people who were behind? And in this case, maybe it was Am Yisrael who did not fear God. Maybe it's both of them that did not fear God. There's something, Am Yisrael has not made it yet. They're a slave people, but they have not yet learnt how to create a great society. They haven't learnt the lesson of the Exodus, which is not to allow anybody to be vulnerable, not allow to allow anybody to be unprotected and exposed to danger. And so it really could be that both lack Yirat Hashem, one because it attacks the weak, and the other because it fails to protect them. And now we can reinterpret it. What does the doctrine to destroy Amalek mean? When we are safe, when we have our own country, when we have our own power, we must not become Amalek. We must make sure we take care of the poor. In fact, once you're strong, there's no reason to destroy Amalek. Once one has power, then one is able, one does not have to destroy Amalek completely. One's able to use one's power in wise ways. And the best way, I heard one teacher say, the best way to get rid of Amalek is to create a world in which Amalek can't exist. To create a society that is so good that there aren't weak people, that people are taken care of, and if they are attacked, everybody will come to their rescue. So what this does is very clever, if I say so myself. I'm just repeating other people's ideas so I can say it. What it's really saying is that what the obligation to destroy Amalek becomes, instead of an obligation to destroy other people, it becomes an obligation to destroy Amalek-like behavior from our own point of view, and to become agents for peace. That's mostly Rabbi Shai Held, a little bit of pieces from me and from other sources. Rav Yehuda Amital, the late Rav Yehuda Amital, the Rosh Yeshiva of Har Etzion, he said, he focused on the word Asher Karcha Bederech, that Amalek did something for you on the way, that there was a certain randomness, that Karcha Bederech he understands as randomness, that they attacked, they just attacked for the fun of it, and Amalek represents absolutely purposeless evil. I'm sure many of us sometimes hear about terrible stories. I can think of many that I've heard of like people who are just nasty to other people. I mean, even computer viruses are that in some way. Totally purposeless, says Rav Amital. We block out Amalek by living purposefully with an objective direction and values. Amalek wanted to destroy us with a sword, but we can destroy them with a sword, but we can also take that sword and transform it into peace. The best way to destroy Amalek is to create a world in which Amalek cannot exist. We are not saying like Michael Lerner that evil doesn't exist, but we are saying like him that we do agree to try and build a better society and create a better world. Perhaps there's no more beautiful way to complete this podcast than by quoting Yeshayahu, V'chitvu charbotam le'itim v'chanitotehem le'mazmerot lo yisagoy el goy cherev v'lo yilmedu od milchama, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not take up sword against nation. They shall never again know war.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkurs. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.